Welcome to the 11th episode of the Meet the Mancunian podcast. This is a penultimate episode of the season. The Meet the Mancunian podcast takes you on a weekly journey around the local community in Manchester. Season 2 has an interesting lineup of inspiring guests making a social or community impact in the city. Presented by Deepa Thomas Sutcliffe, newbie Mancunian. Tune in every Tuesday for your weekly dose of inspiration. As Season 2 draws to a close on Tuesday, 14th June 2022, I wanted to let my loyal listeners know that I'll be taking a 5-week break to spend some time with my family. My parents are visiting from India, and with the pandemic, we haven't seen each other since 2019. I'm recording guests for Season 3 and plan to launch it on Tuesday, 19th July 2022. I do hope you'll continue to listen to the podcast, both older favorite episodes and new interesting ones. And now it's time for the 11th episode. Are you passionate about representation in books? We hear from Aisha Ansari Chowdhury, founder Mirror Me Right, in this episode. I'm delighted to introduce my guest, Aisha Ansari Chowdhury. Thank you, Aisha, for joining me today.
Hi, Deepa. No, not at all. And thank you so much for having me. It's a long name, so, you know, I don't mind at all. But no, you did a really great job. So thank you.
How did you find your passion for representation in books?
You know, it's really funny, actually. I think my journey's kind of come full circle. My mother and my grandfather were both Iberians. And I was always introduced to books when I was younger. You know, going to the library was like a regular Saturday activity. I think with the guys that we were allowed to go to the sweet shop afterwards, so we would, you know, walk down to the library, spend our time there, then go off and get our sweets and come back with a hoard of books. And it's something, you know, I really remember fondly. And then as time went on, I sort of went into other avenues, so sort of left literature behind a little bit. And went into the arts. And whilst I was studying, I did a master's in arts. I came across the sort of conversation representation again. I mean, being a British Muslim, representation is always something that comes up when you think of your identity growing up anyway, and how you situate yourself in you know, navigating your society and the world around you, you know, friendship groups and all sorts. And when I was doing my master's, I was looking into the representation of others in Hollywood films. And so that conversational representation came up. And it was a very political time, in that we had the war on terrorism and, you know, 9/11 had taken place, 7/7 had taken place. And I guess also being a Londoner at that time, you were, whether you wanted to engage in the conversation or not, you were forced to engage in the conversation. You had to put your mark or your stance onto the conversation representation. So I kind of, like I say, it was always in the back of my mind, this conversation that was happening out there. And then I became, you know, I got married, I moved to Manchester, and I became a mother. And I think that's when, you know, I wanted my boys to be into books, and I would go to the local shop and, you know, see what I could find. And I also work in a school, I'm not sure if I mentioned that. And I found that as much as literature was lovely, it was very much the same narrative. It was the same old, and there was no cultural representation. There was no, you know, people from the communities or religions we talked about. And when you come from a culture and a community that has a very strong tradition of literature and poetry and language, you grew up with stories. So I was like, well, where are these stories? I need to see them. I want to see them. I want them for my boys. And so I didn't do much with that whilst they were little. But I think, again, that was a niggle in the back of my mind. And as I was teaching in school, I'm a teacher assistant, so a support assistant. Again, it would just come up again and again that we, you know, it was like, how many years in a row could we do The Hungry Caterpillar or The Gruffalo or Elmer? All gorgeous books, there's no denying that. But it was like, surely we can't keep doing the same stuff. Surely the world is changing. Other conversations needed to be had. So about 2.5 years ago, I mentioned to a friend that, you know, I would like to maybe set up some sort of online bookshop, or start looking into whether there was kind of more representative literature out there. And at the time, a friend of mine had recently published a book, and it had received a lot of critical acclaim in the UK. It went on to win the Blue Peter Children's Book of the Year. And I Facebooked her and said, this is what I'm thinking, but I don't know where to start. And she was kind enough to send me her publicist's email. And so I sent him an email just saying, you know, this is what I want to do, but I don't know anything about running a bookshop. I don't know anything about the industry. And he, you know, sent me a lovely email back and, you know, said, it's actually not as hard as you think. And his response was so lovely. I thought, ooh, okay, if I can do that to him, then let me do some more research and then send out more emails, which I did. And slowly but surely, I had placed my first order of books, children's books, with a few adult titles. And I approached a local coffee shop in Chorlton in Manchester. So I don't know if anyone knows the Tea Hive in Chorlton, but the owners there were very, very kind and offered me space to do my first mini stall. And really, it's grown from there. I set up an Instagram page, and again, I'm not the most tech savvy person or have no background in social media or marketing or any of that, but 2.5 years later, I'm still doing what I'm doing whilst working at a school. So essentially, I have two full-time jobs, but I love both of them. Provide you know, such a great opportunity to give back, and I think that's what's really important to me. So that's where I'm at the moment. And with Memory Right, I now I guess one of my biggest focuses was to work with schools. Being somebody who was already in education, I wanted schools to particularly be the place where I could make the greatest impact. And so now in the remit I work with, I try and liaise with schools and curate book packages for them where they can, you know, provide their students with more representative literature.
That is very interesting. I'm just going to request you to take a step back just because we have listeners from around the world. Tell us a little bit about what representation is and what is representative literature, just in very simple terms, just so that everybody's on the same page.
Yes, of course. So often when people talk about people from other communities, other cultures, they use the word diversity. It was really interesting because I was listening to somebody I follow on Instagram, and they talked about their complexities with the word diversity, because diversity still otherizes people. It still says that we're different. And, you know, that was a sort of niggle where I was like, I don't want that for what I'm talking about. So for me, representation is about promoting the voices of communities that you wouldn't really usually hear from. So from the LGBT community, from the neurodivergent community, from people of different cultures and religions, faith communities. So really, just for me, representation is a reflection of all voices, but particularly those voices being rooted in those, from those people. So I don't need somebody else from another community to write about the community. I wanted to hear the voices from a authentic source, in terms of it's coming from someone who has known with or lived with that community or that neurodiversity, and them sharing their stories. So that's what I mean by representation. And then representative literature would be literature, again, written from those communities, but with characters and protagonists in their stories that are reflective of those communities. You know, and the reason I was passionate about representation as opposed to diversity is because we as communities, as people, we have the strength of the skills to tell our stories, you know, and I think there's such an onus in that, being able to own your story and tell that. There's a real beauty in that. And you know, for me, I guess it's that authentic voice. And not to say that one voice speaks for that whole community. There are multiple voices in and amongst that community, but let it be from there as opposed to somebody else writing it. And so that's what I mean by representative literature.
Thank you so so much for explaining that. And you told us about Mirror Me Right, and you know how you got involved. So maybe tell us a little bit more about what impact have you made. It's been 2.5 years, and you know, tell us a little bit about that.
So I suppose in terms of impact, I think, like I say, the greatest one was in education. So in just last year, we ran a campaign with an author called Louise Gooding, who is a neurodivergent author. And together with her, I'm so used to saying we, but I was able to send 800 copies of Marcus Rashford's books to schools across the country. And I think, you know, being able to, again, raise the voice of a young role model to many children and being able to send that to schools to all across the country has been, you know, something that I can celebrate and said has made an impact. And, you know, when you get messages back from school children saying, you know, we received your books and we've finally seen ourselves in a book, I guess that's the greatest impact. I've also managed to arrange school visits for author visits to a lot of schools. And again, I think, you know, for children to be able to meet the authors and, you know, authors that they admire and, you know, people who've written books that they really love and admire, I think that's been, you know, something to celebrate also. I guess those are two of the things. But I think the biggest impact for me is being able to sustain Mirror Me Right for 2.5 years. And it shows that there's a need. Not long after our ride started, we had the George Floyd murder and also COVID. So, you know, multiple things were happening. And, you know, to set up a business in that time is pretty volatile and pretty tough. But, you know, actually it was probably some of my busiest periods. And, you know, I'm not to say that it's been plain sailing. It's been like a real graft and real hard work. But, you know, it's been wonderful for me. I've been learning, growing along the journey, and I've met some incredible people. And I guess what it does show is that this is impacting the publishing industry. You know, the publishing industry is being challenged, and I think we need more people like myself. And, you know, there are other businesses doing a similar thing to what I do, pushing the publishing industry to continue and to not lose this momentum.
What challenges have you faced? You referred to some challenges. You've started in very challenging times, both with the public discourse around Black Lives Matter, as yes. well as the pandemic itself, which, you know, put all everybody, probably schools and children most of all, in many ways, under stress and pressure as well. So how was it to start up during those times, and what, you know, what kept you going? What challenges did you face? Are there any lessons we could learn from that?
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I mean, I guess to start any business during COVID was challenging. There was no opportunity to meet people. You know, what I do is very much about making connections with people and, you know, talking about the books with them. So to not be able to go into schools to meet people was tough. And again, like I say, because I was just learning the industry and the business to network with people, there were, you know, so many events that were cancelled. And I guess because I also myself, even though I've been in Manchester a few years, I'm slowly getting to know, you know, the community in Manchester in terms of literature. So, you know, all of those things took a bit longer than I would have hoped. But also, I guess, around the time of the Black Lives Matter, you know, movement, I mean, that's an ongoing movement, but particularly at that time, because it was so heightened by what had happened in America. There were a lot of schools that were very reactionary. And so I would get emails saying, you know, we want to support Black businesses and we want Black books. And I was like, well, technically, I'm not a Black business and I don't do Black books. I do books that are inclusive. You know, the books I promote are for people for all cultures, for all communities. I want everybody to read these books because for me, I want to normalize representation, as opposed to what these schools were wanting to do, which was to like magnify into Black voices. And for me, that wasn't productive. You know, if you want to have true representation, you have to have every voice, but you have to have every voice in a prominent way. and as I said, in a kind of as authentic way as possible. So, you know, to also have those conversations with schools and explain to them, you know, what my understanding of inclusive books was, and to kind of bridge their understanding is always going to be a little bit of a challenge. And, you know, just like I say, just trying to navigate and learn how to set up a business and, you know, get to a website. I mean, I spent the first year of Merrimy Write selling books via DMing people through Instagram and people messaging me. And you know, it worked. It's not that it didn't work, actually. It was a really easy way to manage things. But to grow, I would then need to go and, you know, get the website going. And again, you know, in my personal life, because I work a full-time job and I have two children who are still young and still quite dependent on me, you know, trying to navigate all those things was tough. It's not easy. And even now, I'm a one-man band, so packing the books, searching for the books, liaising with authors, liaising with schools, liaising with other businesses, you know, it all comes down to me. So it's tough. It's tough. And, you know, some things have taken more of a toll than others. I'm not going to lie, the website has suffered a little bit at the moment. But, you know, these are all parts of the journey. And I could either beat myself up about it, give up and not bother. But then I'm encouraged by the people who have used my services and have said, Aisha knows her books, or, you know, Aisha's got a good context, or Aisha understands what we want. And those are the things that kind of keep me going. So, yeah, the challenges come with the blessings also, I suppose.
Exactly. I think it's, you know, you need to celebrate the success that you have achieved and the impact you have made by taking these inclusive books to more schools, making it part of the curriculum, which I found very interesting. I really like that. So it wasn't just for the school library, but you're actually encouraging schools to actually adopt this as part of the curriculum.
Yeah, I was really reluctant for schools just to take these books for their libraries. You know, and that's something I speak about when I meet schools and meet teachers. It's no point having these inclusive books if you're going to put them in a bookshelf, because the children won't know to go and get them, you know. So for me, it was very much about being able to incorporate it into your curriculum or to have it present in the classroom, so that teachers were, you know, teachers were directing the children, or children were able to just pick up these books, especially from the early years. You know, for me, representation needs to start as early as possible. You know, children need to not understand differences. They just need to see us all as people, you know, from the get-go. And so I think, like I said, that was really important, working with schools through the curriculum side of things. Also, just going back to something you had mentioned earlier, which was in terms of impact. And I can't take credit for this personally, but I can definitely say that having Merrimy Write and other businesses like myself, I think one of the biggest impacts is that we've been able to not keep a pressure on, but keep the publishing industry aware that they need to not lose the momentum of what they are now starting to do. You know, the publishing industry is so behind in terms of having writers of, you know, writers from other backgrounds and other cultures. And, you know, I think this has had them looking into it more and trying to encourage more underrepresented voices to enter and submit. So hopefully one of the impacts is that we will keep pressing them to keep delivering, and hopefully it will grow as an industry.
Definitely, I think there would be a lot of interest. How can interested people reach out to you and learn more?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram as Merrimy Write, all one word. I'm on Twitter as Mira_Write. And schools and individuals can email me on hello@merrimywrite.com. I'm sometimes also local at the Chawton Market once in a while. So really people can just email, message in, DM me, and I try and get back as, you know, as quick as possible.
And your website as well, if you like to.
Yes, the website is www.merrimywrite.com. Like I say, there are quite a lot of books on there, but not the full breadth of the books I have. So, you know, a good way of just finding out is to message, and I can always tell people what there is in stock. But yeah, I mean, there are hundreds of books. But again, with inclusive books, there are hundreds and thousands of books, but not all of them are good inclusive books. And I think that's something I try to really look into. I try and read as many of the books as possible, so that when I promote books or when I encourage schools to look into books, I'm able to, you know, give a really clear and critical sort of understanding of the text to guide them, really, to see that's whether that's appropriate for them or if that will meet the demographics that they want to meet. So, you know, I do try to know my books.
Very interesting. You also cater to adults, isn't it? You also have some books for adults, is that correct?
Yes, I do. I would love to grow this. I mean, like I say, at the moment, I run Romy Write from a small room in my house. I think my husband is ready to shoot me. He's like, do we need more books in this house? There is no space. There's, you know, book boxes in the hallway, all sorts. But, you know, my dream would be to grow this in Manchester. I think, you know, when I look around in Manchester, I see a very, very creative community, but not enough independent bookshops. You know, I mean, we have the Manchester, you know, the fantastic Manchester Literary Festival, and they do attract, you know, some great authors and some big names. But in terms of our local community, I don't feel like enough is being done in terms of inclusive books. And so, gosh, the dream would be to be able to actually have a physical space one day. But these are challenges that I need to overcome and learn about. And, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I'll keep doing what I do online. But that would be the dream, so that I could actually have more titles in, because there are, you know, brilliant adult books and also local authors. We have some great authors in Manchester. We have Okachukwu Nzulu, who's a local author, Daniela Jawondo, who writes YA. So we've got some fantastic, you know, authors, again, from sort of underrepresented communities who are writing in Manchester. And it would be great to be able to showcase that. So fingers crossed that happens.
for you, and we'd love to hear more when expansion happens. So what advice would you have for people looking to do something similar in another part of the world? We've got listeners from around 21 countries. Maybe one of them gets inspired by the journey you've taken and wants to do something similar. So what are your top tips for them?
Oh, that's interesting. I guess the biggest thing is to overcome fears. You know, I found, you know, my life up to date, fear can really hold you back. And actually, sometimes you just have to just put it out there. You know, when I sent the first email, I thought, oh gosh, you know, they might think I am not writing this correctly. It's not very professional. But actually, the response was so lovely. It spurred me on to go, oh, let me just try my luck and go again. And, you know, like I say, I've grown in that journey. And now I have no qualms going, you know, can I have this book? I want this book. You know, I suppose it's knowing your capacity and what you're prepared to do. But sometimes you have to put yourself out there. You have to try. So I would say to anyone who wants to do something similar, go for it, really. No, I think the biggest thing I've learned is knowing what you stand for. You know, as a bookseller, knowing what it is you want to achieve with what you're doing. You know, if you want to be a normal bookshop with every book, that's easy, not a problem. But if you have a focus, and for me it was very much having people from, you know, communities similar to mine, hearing their voices, having their books, promoting those books, then, you know, I knew what I wanted from Romy Write. It's also reflected in the title. So when I thought of the company name, people were like, why Romy Write? It's a mouthful, it's not the shortest of names, but it was a play on, you know, mirroring us, but also, you know, when I say me, not me individually, but me, my community. But the right was in writing, but also correctly, you know, like I say, we have those stories. We don't need somebody else to tell our stories. So let us tell our stories. So I think once you know what you stand for, once you know what you want to achieve, what the crux of what motivates you is, you know, that gives you your foundation to build on. So I think that would be my main advice to somebody.
Thank you so much.
And network. Sorry, I just wanted to add a network. You know, get to know the industry that you're liaising with, make friends in the industry. Don't be afraid to ask questions. you know, these are all things, you know, I made mistakes in the early years, and I probably will still make mistakes, but again, like I say, till you try, you never know.
Thank you so much for sharing those tips, and I think it would be very useful for anyone listening who might want to do something similar, set up their own little indie bookstore or inclusive bookstore, depending on what, you know, what's appropriate for that culture and
country. Yes, of course.
So just signature questions are now what's next on the agenda. So I switch gear here and I ask you the four signature questions, which I ask all my guests. And
okay.
First one is, what do you love the most about Manchester?
Interesting. So I'm not going to lie, it took me a few years to start to love Manchester. As I said, I was a Londoner who moved up. And when I first moved up, I knew no one beyond my husband's family. So, you know, it was a whole journey for me. It was a whole new starting point. I had to make new friends. And I think having my children here helped that, because it forced me to go out of my comfort zones and attend, you know, baby groups and get to know people. And, you know, eventually I started going out a bit more. I started working in Manchester. And I think all those things helped me to grow to love the city. I love the cultural change that is happening in Manchester. There are some lovely events that are now being offered. There's some fantastic institutes here. And there is an energy about the city that people want to do things. People do want to make change. Sometimes I get a little bit frustrated that change is a little bit slow in coming. And it seems to be a lot of the same people involved. But I think slowly but surely more voices will break through. And I hope I might be one of those voices in time. I guess what I also love about Manchester is not just the city centre, but its surrounding areas. I think we're you know, it's a very beautifully located so that you're very near to some really stunning spots. And that's lovely to see. So, you know, if I say as a trade-off to London, which is a very big city, it's, you know, it now also feels very much like home too. It's got a bit of everything. So that's what I love about Manchester.
For sharing that. Where's your favourite place in Manchester?
Oh gosh. I'd say maybe around the city centre, you know, in institutes like the Whitworth, or, you know, I don't think I have one particular place, but I just love everything that it has to offer.
Sure. What's the most important life lesson you've learned?
But I think very much to know yourself would be the most important life lesson, to have faith in what you believe and what you stand for.
Thank you. If someone wrote a book on your life, what would they title it? I've got a simple one for you as a prompt.
Go for it.
Mirror Me Right.
Maybe they would. Or I don't know. You know, your life takes so many twists and turns. So maybe it would be something along that line. You know, the hippledy-pickledy journey of fashion, sorry. You know, something along those lines.
Higgledy journey of Aishansari. Nice one.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I say, you really don't know. You know, it's interesting when I'm in the school system and I see, you know, children at, you know, 11 being asked where do they go for high school? What do they want to achieve? What do they want to do when they're older? You know, and then again at GCSE, you know, what do you want to do in your life? And, you know, again at A-level, you know, I think if I go look at my life, I'd gone from wanting to be a vet to a psychologist to a writer to an artist. You know, your life is just, honestly, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who you're going to meet along the way. I never thought I would have left London to live in Manchester with my husband. You know, it was something which was never on my mind. So again, you really don't know what gets thrown in and what changes your angle in life. And again, Mirror Me Right, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, it wasn't even a thought. So, you know, for it to come to this and now be at the crux of what I want to do more so moving forward, it just shows that you just can't tell. Maybe that's the title, you just don't know.
That's a good one too. So you come up with three titles. That's not bad.
We got there in the end.
So this is your opportunity to talk to me about anything that you're kind of coming up with, something new in the horizon, anything that we forgot to discuss.
I started off initially just wanted to change the opinion of a few teachers here and there. Actually, when I look at the initial setup of Murray Wright, I was looking to work with Jess Gordon in Manchester, and it's grown. I've sent book boxes to schools in Scotland, I've sent books to Kenya, to Nigeria, so in some ways we've gone international. I've gone international. In some ways it's still very much the UK, but across the UK, I would like to just keep building on what I'm doing. I would love to work with more schools, particularly in Manchester, being in my locality. I've had more success with schools outside of, and it feels a shame that I can't do more so for the schools in Manchester. I would love to. Whilst I was doing Memory Write, I knew I wanted to do more. This for me is very much starting. This might take, it might be more a few more years of just doing the setting of the books, but I would love, in my sort of mirror of dreams, I would love to say that, again, like I said, the bookshop would be a dream. To maybe go into publishing would be fantastic. Again, an industry I know nothing of, in terms of actually being a publisher, but maybe something to look to. But one thing that I would like to start more imminently, I've been talking about starting a Murray Wright book club for schools. So I've actually been working on that at the moment, and I need to start liaising with schools about that. I'm building on something called the Mirror Masters. So that will just be a book club that can be run in schools. Mirror Me Write would obviously provide the books for that to sustain it. But yeah, that's something I'm looking to currently.
Thanks so much, Aisha. And I wish you good luck with all those dreams. They sound wonderful, and I hope they all come true at the right stages in your life.
Oh, thank you so much, Deepa. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. And like I say, this is all very much learning for me. So I've been very blessed and very grateful for where I've got to now. But yeah, there's still work to be done. There's always work to be done. I think when you work in the areas of inclusion and representation, it doesn't stop. It becomes life work, as you said, and it's very much about making an impact. So let's hope it doesn't stop.
Aisha, thank you for talking to me and my listeners. Thank you all for listening from so many countries around the globe. I'm so glad to know you're finding some inspiration from the amazing Mancunian guests who feature here. I hope you enjoy the 11th episode of the Meet the Mancunian podcast season 2. Tune in every Tuesday for a new episode. Please do consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. I will also be grateful if you could share this podcast with a friend or a family member. Thank you.